You're not comfortable with jizz, but you're comfortable with saying circumjaculated the
Yeah,
globe.
yes, that's yes. hilarious. Yes.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, presented by CinemaSins.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, a weekly look at everything going on inside the world of CinemaSins. I'm Aaron Dyson. I'm joined this week by fellow baffle gabbers, Daniel Cardoso.
Hello.
And Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
We write for CinemaSins and TV Sins and do various other things inside the CinemaSins universe as well. Brand new pairing, this three.
Yes.
I almost just for the fact that Ian, Jonathan, and I, our birthday is the day this releases. This episode releases
Why you got to give away my thing at the end?
Because I was like, oh, that'd be fun to have the birthday boys on for, you know, like the May 26th yeah. episode. And then I was like, Daniel wrote on every I single know. Thing this week. We must pick the brain of this genius who is able to do all this. So we've got Daniel on. Jonathan, you wrote in some of the stuff this week as well. So we yeah. wanted to hear from you. It's going to be a fun week.
With the script load that Ian has, he's probably okay not being on today, is my guess.
Yes, yes.
Not well, that we all don't have it too, but
he's obviously not doing any work right now because he doesn't have a single writing credit this week. So, you know, obviously he's just sitting around doing nothing.
Man, it's impossible to remember what's coming, what's going to be released each week, right? Because, I mean, we used to be so tight to the schedule. Like, we were editing videos, like, 7 days before they released, but now some of them are like a month and a half.
We were editing videos 2 days before they released.
Oh, that's true.
A few years ago, yeah, it was cutting it close sometimes, but yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right. I have a hard time knowing, you know, which video is which week and when it got written on, and there's several channels and. You know, I think I wrote a commercial sins, and when is that going on? You know, like all that stuff is just, I have to look. That's why we make charts. Mm-hmm. All right, well, I think we can get into it. Let's do this inside scoop.
What's he building in there?
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
This is the true story.
We're going to take a look at the videos from the week, the process of sending them, how we felt about the stuff we are sending in general. The commercial sins for this week was Little Caesars Stuffed in a Room. This is the stuffed crust Little Caesars commercial. Jonathan, what was it like to send this?
This was one that Jeremy, I think, on Slack or something was like, hey, I'm getting a lot of people hitting me up about this Little Caesars commercial saying they might be either poking fun at us or, well, I guess that's what we think. But I still don't know that I think that's what it is, and I don't know that he does either. But it is interesting because they all of a sudden they have the words pop up at the bottom that are like, you know, don't take us seriously, like we're not all really stuffed in a room or whatever, and you know, this is a made-up universe. So we thought that would be fun to tackle, so I kind of moved that to the top of the list. We had a few more we were working on, but I figured that was one we could get out. I think this was just a couple weeks ago, so this was a really quick turnaround. Maybe the Panera Bread one was It's probably on the same kind of turnaround mm-hmm. status as that one was, but a Panera chicken sandwich, not Panera Bread. But it was fun. I have no idea if they really were poking fun at us or even have any idea who we are, but it was kind of fun taking it from that angle and just being like, I appreciate you trying to be commercial sins proof, but, you know, and then just, you know, kind of letting them have it in our own way. Also, that whole setup seemed horrifying to me. Like, I can't imagine being in a room with that many people with nothing going on, but mm-hmm. then you add like Little Caesars pizza smells and stuff like that into the mix, and I'm just like, ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
It was kind of frightening. It was kind of a horror commercial, in my opinion. But
I'm thankful in situations like that I'm tall. Because because when you're tall, like, you're not in people's armpits, you're, you know, yeah. you have a sight line, you know, you're above kind of, so like claustrophobia isn't necessarily an issue once you get to a certain height.
It's like the Haunted Mansion elevator, if you've ever done that.
Yes.
Like, add Little Caesars pizza into the Haunted Mansion elevator.
Don't give Disney any ideas. Don't give them any ideas. Daniel, some thoughts?
I thought it was great. I don't remember Little Caesars pizza.
Oh, wow.
Like, I remember, I remember it as a thing.
You know, it exists.
You don't have them like where you are?
Like, they are around, but like where I'm at, there are so many pizza places. Like, we have reached like a critical mass where, to the point where I'm not even sure how like the population is supporting this many pizza places. And so many like mom and pop, like independent places that are really, really good that, like, it's just like, I don't really know anyone that has like had Little Caesar's pizza and like told me about it. Like,
that's wild.
Interesting. Yeah. They're pretty, I mean, I don't know if they're big here, but like, you know, it's like a fast food scenario, right? It's like, it's a $5 pizza. So it's just, you know.
Yeah. That's its thing, man. If you want to spend, you know, $5 on a pizza.
And you just go pick it up. Like, it's already ready. Like, you don't have to wait for it half the time.
Yeah.
And in terms of like chains, that, I think like Domino's is much bigger around me.
That makes sense. So,
but I really enjoyed a few of the sins here. Yeah, why do you ask so many questions about a fake commercial universe?
Yeah, it's interesting. We probably should talk about it and each kind of give our thoughts. It's hard for me to believe they're directly referencing
yeah,
us. I think they're just playing into nitpick culture, which is, you know, obviously a thing now. It's interesting. What do you think, Daniel?
Like, I mean, if the writing wasn't on the bottom of the screen, like where it was, I would say it's random, but I feel like it's at least aware of the format.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like that's sort of, it doesn't feel like it's not aware of the format that we're using. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know if it got it from us or got it from somebody that's doing something like us but it's definitely aware of the format. Yeah. And I just love the reference to the Constitution. Whenever you can bring that up in relation to pizza is, and the side note that I've never read the Constitution.
So good.
I really enjoy making like a declarative statement like that and then making a comment that the narrator has zero clue what they're talking about. That's kind of become a thing I enjoy doing.
Yeah. I love the idea that our founding fathers really went into such detail in the Constitution that they covered all of these things. It's a beautiful idea. My Little Caesars experience is vast. I am the exact opposite end of Daniel. All four of my children work at Little Caesars. Two of my children have run Little Caesars stores, like been the general manager at Little Caesars.
Oh, wow.
If you're thinking, how do you have children old enough to general manage a store? Well, that says a little bit about Little Caesars and their workforce more than it says about the age of my children. But my kids are awesome. I don't mean to say that they shouldn't be managing, just that they are young to be managing a store. So I've had lots and lots of Little Caesars pizza. Even before my kids worked there, pizza night was Friday night, and we would either do Domino's or Little Caesars, and often Little Caesars, just because when you're trying to, you know, pinch pennies, like especially, Little Caesars can come in really handy, and it's fine. It's fine pizza. Like, it's hard to mess up pizza in some ways, but it's not great. But as far as stuffed crust goes, oh, man, that's the thing. I remember when Pizza Hut introduced stuffed crust, like back when I was a kid, and it was like, this may be the greatest invention ever. You put mozzarella cheese in the crust of the pizza. You are geniuses. You should have statues. They should write poems about you that will go in tomes for the history of mankind. Put the stuffed crust in every single pizza. I love it so much. It's my favorite thing. Jonathan agrees wholeheartedly. I can tell by that.
I was thinking, I don't mind it, but I'm more like a New York style pizza person anyways. Like if I can have that, and that would obviously never have like a stuffed crust. I don't think.
Yeah.
It's a thinner type. So, I mean, I like it. My wife is a cheese nut, so she loves.
Yeah.
Adding more cheese to something is always a positive for her. So I've had plenty of it, especially the Pizza Hut. I will say Little Caesars, if I remember correctly, it's been around forever, but they kind of like almost died off there for a second. I think once they introduced the drive-through angle to their establishments and the pizzas were already hot and ready and it was all fine. I mean, I think that's when they really kind of got their next wave, because all of a sudden we had like five stores, you know, in my area that I'm at. So
yeah, when I was growing up, Little Caesars was a sit down restaurant. You went to Little Caesars
and pick up.
Yeah, you could order and pick up, but for the most part, you'd go get a table and eat some Little Caesars. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's really wild to think how the pizza business has changed to, you know, really adapt to what it's great at, which is immediate food. Like, pizza, you can make, you know, pizza ovens cook that thing so fast, and it's just ready, you know? So, yeah, it's been interesting to watch that change.
But it also asks the question, like, why are we, like, buying so much of it? Because it is so easy. It's like, why aren't we just making more pizza at home?
it's true. It's true. It's a fair point.
I've just broken their business model, and we're just going to see the right. stocks just plummet on Little Caesars. And...
If you ever want to break capitalism, just depend on the hardworking people and not the ease of use. Yeah, ease never means anything for people. I think this was a great Sins video. I just love the line, "We're all aware, Diane," after the sin about being enamored with the stuffed crust. I just thought that was really, really funny. And we talked about the other stuff that I had written down, but fun stuff. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Let's move into TV Sins. Stranger Things this week. We are doing a Stranger Things run in anticipation of the new season coming up, dropping, I think, in a week from when we record this. So in less than a week from when this episode drops, we will see some new Stranger Things. So we are going through the first season and sending the entire first season. The two episodes that we talked about this last week were 6 and 7, I believe, The Monster and The Bathtub. You both wrote on both of these. These were both Cardoso Watkins scripts. So I guess we will separate them. We'll talk about The Monster first because, you know, I want to talk about specific sins and that kind of stuff. We can, but just general thoughts about kind of sending, you know, this kind of run up to the end of the first season of Stranger Things. How's that been for you guys? Daniel, how did you feel about these two?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed both these episodes. I've been enjoying the series a lot as a rewatch, which surprised me just because I'd seen it so long ago, but like it really holds up in terms of rewatchability. I don't know if that has something to do with all the nostalgia and like the sort of the what it's like the content that it's playing off of.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I find all that stuff to be rewatchable too. So it might just be because of like my my experience like with 80s films and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it started like the show at this point like has done all the setups, and like now that you're starting to get a lot of like the payoffs, like there's a lot more things being uncovered, and I think that goes from this episode even into the next episode. Mm-hmm. Which was really enjoyable, and the characters are evolving and their arcs are sort of like becoming more clear, which is also like really a cool thing to see in this episode, especially with like Nancy and Jonathan like teaming up and like what they're kind of going through.
Yeah. Jonathan, what about you on Stranger Things, The Monster?
Yeah, no, this was good. I've been enjoying the rewatch too, I think. This is, I guess, this might be like my third time through the first season because I rewatched it at one point with my daughter. So I think this is my third time through the first season. Mm-hmm. And I still think it's the best season. I think I'm up to date. I think I've seen all of season 3, but it's been so long. It feels like it's been so long. Especially seeing those pictures of season 4, and I can't figure out if they're still supposed to be like in high school because they look so old.
They're like 30.
But yeah, I know. But I don't know what all. It's like, yeah, like it seriously, like I think it's well that it looks like they just put a bowl cut on a 30-year-old. Like that's what it looks like. But I still like the Matthew Modine hair thing. Like I don't know how we talked about this last week. Like I wish we had a shirt. I don't know if we could actually have a shirt though, because we'd be, you know, referencing a show mm-hmm. and an actual person. I don't know what the licensing and headache that would be, but
right.
God, if we had a Matthew Modine's Hair Is Still a Sin shirt, I think that would be awesome. But I loved how Daniel took it in different directions with both of these.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, that was awesome. Cause I think I had a pretty standard one and then Daniel came in, all that. And then Daniel sending that they were taking the creative license away from the narrator's perspective, I thought was also
mm-hmm.
Very funny for this episode. Are we talking about them separately? I think that's what you
yeah,
said.
Yeah, we'll talk about them separately.
Okay.
You know, just kind of general thoughts on the show as it kind of continues to come to the end of season one as far as what we're seeing. I think season one of Stranger Things is really, really good. I haven't liked the other seasons quite as much, and I don't know if I just – if kind of like season one was like my fill, or if I'm kind of falling into the kids are aging out of what I liked about it. Like, you know, and I hate that that might be the case, but I'm human, you know, mm-hmm. so there is that element where it's just like, you know – Dustin is so great in that first season,
and he
continues to be great. The actor is wonderful, but there is just something about that age and the way his voice squeaks on some of the lines. It's just so amazing. I love it.
Oh, it's great. And I also he's a great character, though, because I was to mm-hmm. say the one thing about season two that I like when they started pairing off people differently, and that Dustin Steve stuff is amazing.
Yeah, that's true. Like, that's fair. Yeah.
They play off each other so well. But, I think this is the season we get the most with just the kids together,
mm-hmm.
Minus Will. And they just all play off each other so well.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
The specific sins that I wanted to mention from you guys, whoever wrote the stuff about pancakes, I could feel it inside of you. Like, why are we messing with perfect foods?
We both wrote so much about pancakes.
We did. That's true. We did. Some of your stuff might be in there too, actually. I might have combined them. I can't remember. But
it was so good.
I hate putting stuff in pancakes. I hate it.
It came up once or twice. I'm kind of with you. It's such a, they're so tasty. They're meant to be tasty. Like, but like toppings are fine. You know, it's just a different, like flavored syrups or those kind of things. Yeah. It's fine with me.
And
but
Daniel definitely wrote the one though, where he was like, none of these represent what actually blueberry pancakes are.
Yes. It's so
true. Which
was
also true. Yeah.
I will say the one topping I do like in my pancake batter is bananas. Banana pancakes are really good.
If I was
really
going to do anything, it would be bananas.
I do enjoy those. Then I did want to mention the specific haircut sin. When he's saying that he's got big news, and we're just like, oh, he's getting a haircut? Oh, he's getting a haircut! And then he's not getting a haircut. Just loved that so much. All right, let's move on to the next Stranger Things, the bathtub. This is the one where Eleven goes to the dark void. And I don't know if Scarlett Johansson's there already or if that's maybe a different place. but anyhow, she does that by laying in a bathtub in the middle of their gymnasium. Some thoughts on this one. Jonathan, we'll start with you on this one.
I don't remember when you said that thing about the bathtub, though. When she comes out, she's like, I can find them in the bath. And then I don't remember exactly what Daniel wrote, but it was like, it was talking about just like, how could you be possibly like that, just generic with your answer, and everybody understands immediately.
Yeah, everyone's just like, oh, I get what that means.
like, okay, that's a weird thing to say. Let's get back to the conversation at hand. That's mm-hmm. what most people would do.
Yeah.
No, but I had a lot of fun. I think this was just another one followed up with the monster. I think the one thing I wanted to talk about specifically, though, was the swamp thing, which when I wrote that sin, it was pretty simply just like, I think it just was called, have you ever wondered what it would be like if Swamp Thing jizzed on everything
right,
or whatever?
Right, yeah.
And I just remember Daniel's comment was like, oh God, or something like that. And then Aaron did not really enjoy saying the word jizz.
It's not one of my favorite words.
No,
I don't
and
know
that's
why.
Fine.
I just don't like saying it.
Because what you came up with was so much more disturbing and so much more fun. But and then I mean, and you even added the thing at the end. Like, you completely rewrote it. You added the thing at the end, too, where it's like, and don't ever talk to me again, which I thought was absolutely amazing. But no, you're right. That is a weird word. I just couldn't like sperm or semen. Like, none of that made sense. So I think that's what I came up with. But then you just took that and then you made it something. Something even better. So,
So Aaron is more comfortable with, you're not comfortable with jizz, but you're comfortable with saying circumjaculated the globe.
Yeah. Yes, that's hilarious. Yes. It also plays off of the word ejaculate, which is like an actual word. Like, it's not, you know, some kind of made up.
I think that's better. I think that's better than just being kind of crude. I mean, jizz does sound a little more crude, I guess. And, but it's kind of like, and I brought this up to Aaron when I read that. I was like, you know, there's this great Patton Oswalt bit about that where when they edit stuff for television and they change the word to something that, and I can't remember what he says. He says they changed something to like, it was like, maybe it was like sperm or semen or jizz or something. Mm-hmm. They change it to like the purple Yoo-hoo juice or something like that. You know, it's just something crazy. And he's like, that sounds so much worse than just saying the actual word. And it also makes it funnier, I think.
Spilled his Brogert sundae. I mean, come on. Anyhow, that's what I like. I like, you know, kind of, you know, doing the fun plays on words as opposed to just like saying a crude word or whatever. But yeah,
I also just like how crazy we've gotten with those like behind the scenes people having conversations. Like those just get weirder and weirder the more we go.
Who would have thought in both Stranger Things this week and I think West Side Story would both have sperm jokes in them?
Yeah, I mean, so
you gotta have
it. Can't have West Side Story without sperm, I guess.
It's true. It's a fair point.
Those kids have to be born somehow.
Daniel,
explaining that, Jonathan, because I was really confused there for a second. I was like, you can't have West Side Story. Okay.
Listen, it's just a rule. It's just a rule. Shakespeare.
You don't ask questions about these things.
I think honestly, my feeling, like I may have just already commented on the bathtub episode, just like in the previous episode, just because in my mind they're like the same thing. But I loved all the payoffs where where everyone like comes together and like you see basically the result of like Hopper, like all his like investigations and everything he's going through, and like everyone's like, oh right, no one is crazy, like this shit is really happening and like we need to deal with it, like what's his name from the A-Team, Hannibal, so he says,
yeah,
I love it when a plan comes together, and like it's just like you there's just something really enjoyable about that, like team up, like everyone, you know, working together to get their friend and their son.
I like Hopper in this season too a lot more than I like him in the other seasons. I think they turned him into more of like a like an A-Team type character, which I don't think that's why he's interested in the first season. I just like that he's kind of like George Clooney in From Dusk Till Dawn, where he's like, you know, I don't believe in this shit, but I do believe in what I see, and like this is how we're gonna have to deal with it. Like, I just like that kind of, like, he's not even, may not even be very good at his job. Like, I mean, we get introduced by him not even want to answer in calls. He just wants to eat donuts, you know, and stuff like that. So I don't know. That just made me think of that.
Yeah, no, those kind of heroes are. For me, like right now, like way more compelling than like people that like have their shit together. Like, it's just there's something about the realness of the person doing like these sort of surreal and like impossible things that makes it feel good as a viewer.
Yeah.
See, I wanted to point out one of the sins that about Mike's father, and like they're like looking out the window and he says something, and they have just like talked to Matthew Modine. He said, Karen's like, we should be out there looking for him. He's like, honey, we have to trust them, okay? And the sin is, Stranger Things does a pretty good job of having all the 80s goodness mixed in with some really interesting character work. So why did Ted Wheeler have to be a walking, believes the government is always there to help you idiot father cliche? That just distilled like my feelings about him as a character in like the perfect way. It's like, beyond that, he's just like not really contributing anything to this season.
No. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
They should have just had him at work the whole season. He should have just been at work.
Just go to work, man. Go to work.
And I do feel like it, that he may represent, that he probably represents like a person from that time period. Like, I'm sure that is like, that it makes sense, but it's still like, it still makes him uninteresting as a character. So I feel pretty good with the sinning of it.
Well, I have seen some people, which have to be younger people, complain that like the parents don't ever know where the kids are and stuff. But like, if you lived through the 80s, that was just the way it was. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, I know I was allowed to do a like roam around and do whatever. And like, there's no way I would let my daughter do that now. You know, it's so weird how things have changed as far as too much CSI. Yeah, too much CSI. That's right. Law and Order and CSI ruined everything. You heard it here.
But wasn't like missing children a big thing? Like, they were putting kids on milk cartons and things during that time period.
Yeah.
And,
so like, if you went to like whenever we went to like shopping malls or stuff like that, I had to stay with my mom. But like in our neighborhood, like I would leave the house at like 9 a.m. and I would just come back at like 9 o'clock at night. You know, she might not see me all day. That was just, I don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, what I was thinking is that like sort of that aspect of that time period like affected like.
Oh yes, I you're absolutely correct.
Where, like, yeah. People affected us started when we keeping their parents. Children. They're yeah. keeping their children closer because of that.
And then stuff but like CSI, I mean, we were joking about that in the, or not joking about it. We were talking about that in the pre-show, but like seriously, but like stuff like Nancy Grace, I really think stuff like that has really set a mind, gave everybody a mindset that's different. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
see news a lot more than we did then. Cause we've got 24-hour news channels. We didn't have those, you know,
yep.
until probably the Gulf War, I guess was kind of when that started.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. Another great script from you guys. Really loved this. I wanted to hear you, Daniel, talk about the, yes, this is suddenly a Spider-Man sin with the pointing, just how you came up with that. And I just thought it was so great.
That was so weird that I almost don't even really have a great explanation for it. I think it was just like I had written the word pointing so many times and like the Spider-Man because of like No Way Home and like everything has been in like just in the back of my mind. So it's like it felt like that after a while when I was just like, oh, we're pointing out something that he's pointing out that, and then I was just like, it just, that meme came into my mind and I was like, I wanted to see if like if it would work by just like assigning the characters like the labels, and like I think it mostly does work. Like I feel like I was trying to work out the eternal logic of like everyone pointing at everyone. I think that one of them doesn't work, and I'm not going to admit here which one it is. But like, I think that we needed to actually have one more reference to someone pointing at someone for it to be complete. But so
sometimes the pancakes just you don't get cooked all the way through, but they're still delicious. They're still delicious. So I really loved that. I also wanted to mention, and I'll finish with this on the Stranger Things. We do an Ernest and Hansel duffer in this episode because we had gone back and looked at the names of the Duffer brothers and we're like, oh, we missed E and H, forgetting that at the very beginning of the second episode, we actually did E and H because we realized we missed it in the first one.
Oh.
And so there are now two E and H's, if you've been following the alphabetized Duffer brother names, which just like you're talking, Daniel, with like, I don't think it quite worked. Like, then there's this thing in my brain that's like, oh, now there's an extra E and an H in our Duffer names. And anyways, so listen, all of that is, I think, on me because I'm the one that forgot the E and the H in the first place and then added it in the second one and then forgot that I added it in the second one, so it's, you know, it's all my fault.
I can't even remember if when we did the second episode we still hadn't done like a season long thing.
So
we weren't even thinking about that, but then when
Jeremy narrates those first two Stranger Things episodes,
and I think Daniel and I did the third episode too. I could be wrong. Was that us? That sounds right.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think so.
But And that's when I went back and I watched the first two, and there was a couple of like the Matthew Modine thing and then the names. And I was like, oh, that, you know, we were all just kind of like, that would be cool if we kept that, you know. So then when we have the season long video, spoiler alert, not that that's really much of a spoiler, but, you know, we'd have all those kind of continuing into each other, which would be really fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now there's an extra E and H. So yeah, we got to go back and redo the whole thing.
Now we've got to do 24 more names.
And just add them in. It'll be like those, like, this is Ethan, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. All right, let's move into CinemaSins. It was Dicer Cardoso week on CinemaSins.
It was also West week.
Yes. Dicer Cardoso write about the West week on CinemaSins. So yes, we wrote both these scripts. We'll start with West Side Story 2021. This is, of course, the Spielberg remake of the 61. Tell me, Jonathan, is it 61? When was the first West Side Story?
I'm almost positive you're right, but I will double check that. But I think it's 61.
So remaking the 60s version of West Side Story that was itself a retelling of Romeo and Juliet. So, and not updating the time frame, remaking the actual 60s time frame version of this movie. Daniel, I'm going to start with you. What are some of your thoughts on this whole thing?
My initial thought is that I think we got lucky that we didn't end up with like Wild Wild West sins in West Side Story, because they're both three word titles of relatively the same length. And even going back and looking at them side by side, I clicked on one of the scripts and I was like, this is not even the right movie that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah.
So I feel like we should pat ourselves on the back for pulling that off alone.
You know, there's a Sin in West Side Story about Will Smith, or, you know.
we should have done that just to see what people would say.
Where's the mechanical spider?
Which one are we talking about again? Oh, West Side Story. I love the movie visually. Like, I did not mind like rewatching a lot of the scenes.
It's so amazing.
Just for how they looked. My favorite was the cool scene. Like, there was just something about the camera work and like even like the lighting and just like the way that it looked that I really loved. And then but the other side of that is that I'm just not really a fan of Romeo and Juliet as a story. On top of that, of the story of West Side Story, like I think I've just seen it's done so many times in real life, in actual plays. Like, I'm pretty sure they did a production of it at my high school, and like we read Romeo and Juliet and like in probably two different English classes. Like I get it, and I feel like there's a lot of relevant things to that story. So it's not that I don't learn something new like from each viewing or reading, but it does. I am tired of it. And what's it? Musicals, sending them is difficult for me personally. I think like we had talked about this before, just because of like the people aren't just like singing and dancing in real life. So it's like the logic of that, like sort of makes you feel like you kind of just need to accept everything. So it's like trying to then focus back on to like what the story is, or what are little like logic things or that are kind of funny or are kind of out of place. One right off the bat was the New York Housing Authority that you wrote, which that complete, like I was spending so much time trying to write something about the Lincoln Center that I watched that scene where it just goes past that sign like 15 times. I never noticed the New York Housing Authority. And then you wrote the sin and I read it and I was like, oh yes, absolutely. Holy crap.
And I wonder how many people caught the double the in the sin, right? Like, you know, you wonder how many people just buzzed by those subtitles and didn't even realize there were two the's in the actual sin itself, and kind of what that percentage. I've gone through the comments and I haven't seen anybody be like, oh, I saw what you did there. So I'm sure it's in there somewhere, but I'm sure somebody caught it. But it's our brain just does it. It just eliminates the double word. It's pretty amazing that way.
No, I missed it when I read the sin too. I missed it. I realized I missed it on screen. Then I missed it when you wrote it twice in the sin.
Maybe
immediately question, what am I doing here? I was like, jeez.
The brain is weird, man. Like, there are these things where these paragraphs that they'll tell you to read, and you'll just read it, and you'll think, oh, everything's fine. And then they'll point out to you all the things your brain did to change words to make them correct. Like, there's this thing, if the first and last letter are correct, and the other letters in the middle are the letters from the word, in any order, your brain will turn that into the word. Really quickly. It's just it's really impressive the way our brain assimilates meaning from symbols. So yeah, it's interesting.
That's also why it's good we have at least two writers on all these, because I mean, it's impossible to catch everything, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Some of the other things I liked, you pointed out that the pinball machine wasn't legal until 1976.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
Which is just a really cool fact that I had not.
I learned that from Licorice Pizza this last year. Yeah. Licorice Pizza is about the legalization of pinball machines in California in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
So that's right. Yeah. It blows my mind that pinball machines were illegal. What is going on? I don't even understand. It's wild.
The other, there's one more. Well, there's a bunch that I really loved in this one, but the one that I kind of want to read just because I loved Jeremy's delivery on this one was when Maria and Tony have, they just got it on after lot of weird stuff has happened.
Yeah.
And the Sin goes, what the literal fuck? Your lifelong bestie and her brother were stabbed to death just a few hours ago, and you were like, this feels like the perfect time to get naked together, baby. You know how we do. the power of boners called, and it says this was on YouTube, freaks. I just thought that I can't even read it as well. He read it so well, and I wrote something similar, but it was not nearly as good.
It had to be sinned. Yeah, man, I loved writing this one. In many ways, writing this West Side Story was the hardest thing to sin and the easiest thing to sin at the same time. Like, it was one of those weird things where I was like, oh, this, you know, it's a musical, so it's difficult, it's long, so there's, you know, a lot there. But then some of the stuff in this story itself is so dumb. Some of the decisions the characters are making are so bad. And like, and it's tragedy porn, like it's just tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. And then the characters, you know, just making weird choices at the end. It was just, I really had a good time sending this one. The one from you that I really wanted to mention was your sperm to worm observation, which is like, if I put this in Google Maps, I'd be arriving at this, you know, the place I started, you know, my origin would be my destination or whatever. I just thought that was really funny. Great observation. And then the fact that when we wrote this, Daniel, I don't know if you remember this, there was so much crossover. Like, we pointed out so many of the same, like right down to like the pet milk sin. Like, we both wrote pet milk sins about a random box in the background of the scene. Like, it's just one of those hive mind things that I find interesting with our work is, you know, how we start to see the same things and find the same things. So I wanted to mention that on this one as well. What about you, Jonathan?
Yeah. So I like this. I still think I prefer the original. I wouldn't say like I just love either one of them. The thing about this one that I thought was a little lacking was I loved Rachel Zegler. Is it Zegler or Ziegler? I guess it's Zegler, right? It's only one E. But anyways, whatever. Rachel Zegler is what I'm going with. I really liked her in this. Ansel Elgort was okay. They had no chemistry though. Like, and you guys send that. I mean, that's
half
another
a Monopoly
thing.
Shoes worth of chemistry would have done the trick.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite sins. And the fact that, like, you know, that even says. Because at least, like, if they had really good chemistry, as ridiculous as that scene is that Daniel was describing, where, you know, people are getting stabbed and killed all around them, and then they just go have sex. At least if they had chemistry, you would still at least, it would be not believable, mm-hmm. but it would be more interesting, I guess. But the fact that they don't, it just, like, stands out, you know. But no, I like it. It's one of those things where you're just like, oh, yeah, Spielberg is one of the best, you know. I mean, he's ridiculous.
It's insane, yeah.
And it's kind of cool because just very few people are making movies like this anymore. So it was just kind of nice to see, this much money poured into something that like wasn't just like a comic book movie or like a crazy mm-hmm. comedy or something like that, you know, whatever's really popular right now. But, so I like those aspects of it, but the movie as a whole, I liked it. You know, I don't know that it's one I'm going to go back to often. Script was great. I don't envy having to write a script about a musical because it's just that you can't really use the music. And that's just, mm-hmm. that's got to be insane, especially in a movie like this where that's almost all it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love the, I'm going to make quick work of the Jets. And then the sin was the AFC East. That was great. I like the choice of, you said, I don't care what Lionel Richie says. Dancing in the streets is rude. I just like that you used the word rude. Like, it sounded like you were like Michelle Tanner from Full House or something.
I'll go ahead and do the one of the nitpickers here. But Lionel Richie didn't sing Dancing in the Streets.
Oh, God, that's right. He did. Oh, my God. He did All Night Long. That's what you were thinking of, right?
Wow. You know, listen, the company answer is we're trolling you, you know, like
exactly what it was. I cannot believe, like, I even like was laughing at that, and I just, of course, Lionel Richie saying it. No, it's Mick Jagger and David
there were a couple
Bowie
versions
with.
Yeah, there were a couple versions.
No, there were, that's right. I think that was a cover. But
I saw that comment too, and I was like, I didn't question it. Like,
Yeah.
But I just believed that Lionel Richie sang that song.
He talks about dancing all the time.
He dances all night long. I mean, on the street, right?
On the streets, right?
And then also I had the pinball sin was great, especially when you ended it with, well, marijuana was also the marijuana of the 60s, but you get my point. Movie doesn't know how to satin or eggshell correctly. Was beautiful. One. And you guys got to do what This Movie Exists, which was, which doesn't happen that often anymore.
We should stop and explain that a little bit, because people think like the This Movie Exists in is just like, oh, huge slam. No, it means something specific. Like it's very much from a Jeremy mindset. Like he really has this thing about movies that should not have been made because it already, you know, exists. In fact, that's, I think it was the very first sin in the channel's history. Am I right about that?
I think movie? That's right. Yes, I believe
this
that's
movie
correct.
Exists because it was the next Spider-Man.
Yeah,
it was the Amazing
reboot.
Spider-Man. It was the reboot, and so you know it definitely was like, why are we doing this again? So it applies here. I think we did it for the Lion King CGI. Mm-hmm. Like you know, it applies in these very specific places. So yeah.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Jeremy kills me because he'll be like, I really like this movie, even though it shouldn't exist or something like that. I'm like, why do you have to say that? Like, you just like the movie. Like, why does there have to be this? Like, I can't admit to fully liking a remake, but...
Yeah. No, Jeremy and I have had that conversation many times. By the way, Josh comes in with the save. Line from All Night Long. Everyone you meet, they're jamming in the streets all night
he
long. So
about
there
it.
You go. Thank you, Josh.
So
that's what
rude.
I was thinking of.
We should answer that comment with a so rude.
yeah.
But yeah, no, that's all. I did. The lesson I had was I'm pretty sure that's not what the priest meant when he said Kingdom Come. I thought that was pretty great.
It was really fun. I got dark on some of this stuff that I wrote on this one, darker than I usually get. One of those moments is like after that, she's over his corpse in the morgue, and the sin is just bet you're sorry about, you know, thinking about sex during church now or whatever. It's like as if she killed him by having those thoughts during church. God was like, mm-mm. So yeah.
Now I've got All Night Long stuck in my head.
There you go. All right, let's move on to the second West, Wild Wild
oh
West. This was also Daniel and I. Daniel, why don't you kick us off again on one of what is clearly, now that we've seen it and looked at it in depth, one of the worst movies ever made in the history of moviedom. Talk on it.
I am very conflicted with this movie. I found it to be... very interesting to revisit it in this way. Mm-hmm. Like watching it as a person I am right now, it clearly fails in a lot of ways to me. And like, I think that there's like certain themes that it's attempting to tackle, like some serious themes using humor, like especially like race and sexuality are mm-hmm. like huge in this movie, which is something I did not even notice when I first saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when did this come out? It was like 99,
yeah. Which is also like for a lot of people one of the greatest years of cinema. And like you got Wild Wild West.
And this is the movie that Will Smith turned down The Matrix for when he was asked to do The Matrix. He did this instead. So yeah,
that's wild. It's wild.
Wild wild.
one thing I felt after like rewatching certain scenes over and over again was like it seemed like there was like. An attempt to do a bit of like do what Blazing Saddles did, and I just don't think it worked because they're trying to inject to use humor to discuss like serious things, mm-hmm. and it just there was something about the way that it was executed with this film that I didn't feel like it worked, at least not for me anyway, and I'm trying to figure out like why that is because I remember at the time like when I was younger like finding a lot of it like to be very humorous to myself at the time,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's something about it, like the type of movie it was trying to be, because I think this came out in the summer, like it was trying to be like a studio tentpole.
Yeah, this is like, what they started calling it, Big Willy Weekend. It was July mm-hmm. 4th.
Yeah,
it was trying to be so big, and it's like I feel like you can't poke fun at like certain things and try to be a big box office movie at the same time. I think that there's something lost in like that process because you're mm-hmm. trying to make it so accessible. Whereas like
right.
Blazing Saddles just downright scared people. I think
right. It wasn't accessible. Yeah. And no, you're absolutely right. That's such a great observation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's how that's like my very analytical feeling about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, for as bad as everyone feels like it, there is still a part of me that really enjoys a lot of things about the movie. Like, I awesome. I enjoy the performances of Will Smith, Kevin Kline, and Kenneth Branagh. Like, I do too.
Like, I do too.
Being on screen, like, there are a lot of fun to watch, even in these characters. I enjoyed the steampunk aesthetic. Like, I love all that, like, you know, taking like old technology and like it, making it feel like futuristic in that way. And like the train, I think, was like a really cool set piece. And like, even along the same lines, it's like they put James Bond in the West. And like, I like, if you told me that they were going to make a 007 movie and just set it, make a 007 prequel and set it in the West or something, like I'd be all about it. I just love that sort of, what's it called? It's like anachronistic.
Did you guys know this was based on a TV show though?
Yes.
I was aware of that.
I was just making sure. It was Steve McQueen, I think. I think that's right.
Yeah.
I've never seen the show though, but I was aware of it. Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty much it. That's like how I,
mm-hmm.
that's how I felt about it. So it's way more complicated than anyone should feel about Wild Wild West as a movie, I think. In terms of sins, I really liked the sign surrender, I will decimate this town, you'll destroy 1/10 of it. I think we can live with that because that educated me on what decimate means and then made me realize that it's in the word deci.
It sure decimate. Is.
And
yep.
I was like, oh, wow, look at that. Words are fun. This was a pretty long one here, but it's like Wes and Loveless are like arguing about midway through the movie, and then I think I wrote this one, but if I didn't, you can take credit for it. villain leaves because his feelings are hurt instead of just killing James West right then and there. And I don't want to hear about how some villains enjoy toying with their opponent more than actually winning. That's only fun to watch when the villain's motives are interesting. Loveless just wants to build insane-looking super weapons, conquer the United States, and then retire to the Northwest for some kinky cyborg sex. Ah, shit. I talked long enough to prove myself wrong again, didn't I? Well, still gets one sin versus the 5 I was going to give it. I just enjoyed writing that one, and it kind of just played out that way because I started writing it, and I was like, oh, shit. Like, his motivations are kind of actually interesting. So I just had to kind of, like, take it to its logical conclusion from there.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. I love that. Yeah, this movie, man, I remember when it came out being somewhat of a defender of it, just just in a way of what did you expect kind of defense. You know, like, we're doing big budget, you know, popcorn movie kind of stuff. But my views on that have changed quite a bit, obviously, because I do think there's something, there is a dumbing down that doesn't have to happen. Movies can be big and, you know, bodacious, but they don't have to be nonsensical. And this movie is nonsensical in so many ways. And that's before you get to some of the crazy decisions about how they handle race, how they handle, ableism with the character that's in the wheelchair. Just like, it definitely comes from that era where we were buddies because we could rip on each other, or, you know, like, it was okay to do those kind of things. But even like, and Daniel, we had conversations about the lynching scene, which is just this terrible part of our history, and it's turned into this stand-up comedy routine.
Yeah, from a that was one of my favorite stunts.
I mean, and we both wrote a bunch on that, and, you know, kept yours because I just thought it was so, just insightful about just how ridiculous that whole scene is. And there's so much of that here.
I just like that you called it crowd work, that he was doing crowd work at a lynching. It was. I mean, I never would have thought of it that way, but it absolutely is.
We had other sins about again, because that section was so meaty, but, you know, there was also the point that we didn't end up putting in there, that when you think of the fact that this is a black man being directed by a white man, saying words written by white men, like, you know, like, it's just to go to a mostly white, like, it's just, it's this weird racial, like, how did anybody think that was a good idea?
I wonder if this is why I don't remember why he turned down Django Unchained, but I I know he did. And I think it was partly to do with, I don't know. I'm kind of curious if after he did Wild Wild West, he was like, I should pay more attention to like what I'm getting involved in. You know, I don't know, maybe not, but I've always, because I would love to see him in The Matrix, by the way. Keanu's great. And I don't think that movie's the same without him, but it's kind of one of those alternate world movies. Like I wish existed. Mm-hmm. Like Sammy Davis Jr. and Beetlejuice. Like I still want to see that movie.
I wouldn't doubt that there, that, I mean, this movie probably definitely played into his decision to whether or not play Django. And like, it's, it gets complicated, especially like when movies are like discussing race, like it gets complicated because like you're trying to judge an art, or you're trying to like think about it as an art form, but like, that art form is like feeding back into and commenting on like tough history for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So it might not, like, it's hard to say, like you'd have to ask him whether he just didn't like what he saw in Django, or whether it was just like, I don't want, like, I've tried juggling that once. I don't want to try to juggle it again. Cause it does, like, this is even a bit uncomfortable for me to even talk about, but like when you hear like interviews with a lot of these big name actors of color, like there is a difference, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, between being just an actor and being a Black actor in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's like those sort of, that feeds into like their decision making about what to take and what mm-hmm. not to take. And like imagine like not seeing Django Unchained, but reading that script and being like, like this is not light, this is heavy. Mm-hmm. Like all that, I mean, I'm just saying like all that comes into play. So just sure. to say that like I absolutely see this movie affecting him. So it's like, what happens if, as hypotheticals, if Will Smith does The Matrix, does he then do Django Unchained?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? It's wild. It's wild to think about. Wild, in fact. The other thing I wanted to mention that absolutely blew me away was how horny this movie is and how explicitly sexual it is. That when he stands up and it has a full reverse package shot, you know, like they're testicles and penis for a good second. And I'm just like, how is this in a PG-13 movie? How, like, I was just like, I mean, and listen, I'm not trying to shame the human body. It's just body parts. I don't care personally. I'm just saying, like, the system is the way it was designed and continues to be designed. It just blew my mind.
Well, I think that also comes into play, though, because like a lot of people are questioning that about Doctor Strange. First off, I think Doctor Strange is a PG-13 movie, the new one.
Oh,
I do.
Yeah.
But I do understand why people are saying, you know, Marvel probably has an easier time with the, like, Disney probably has an easier time with the ratings board. Mm-hmm. Than an indie, because there's a lot of indie films that get rated R that probably should be PG-13, and that hurts them, right, in mm-hmm. the long run.
Right.
So I think that's what part of this is. It's more, not that this couldn't be PG-13, but based on something that wasn't as big as this and didn't have as big of a star in it, would probably be R. Mm-hmm. It does make you wonder, like, how they come to, you know, agreement on these ratings. It's weird. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And just the, you know, the movies, you know, the thong shot that I think we send, you know, just the references to sex toys, both visually and, you know, in the dialogue. Like, I'm just like, wow, this movie.
You see Salma Hayek's ass too, right? I think you do. Don't you? Mm-hmm. Doesn't she have like a rip in her pants or something?
There's a we had a sin there that I think we cut.
Yeah,
but yeah,
did.
She wears Will Smith's pajamas and the butt flap is open.
Yes,
and
you, that's
yeah,
what it
you
is.
See the top of her butt. Which we here's this is why you tune in. So the sin was basically that there's no way that butt flap should have been on her butt if they were Will Smith's pajamas.
Yeah, it
should
that's
have
true.
It should have been up like towards the middle of her back, you know, based on his size.
That's
so,
a good point.
But anyways, I think we ended up debating the relative dimensions of pajamas and how they can sag.
And I'm sure. Well, I mean, and you guys had to pause that scene. You had to study it for a while.
and the Will Smith scene, too, which there's no
true,
way that was
true.
Will Smith. But yes, that is literally a part of my wife will walk around and she'll be like, why are you paused on Selma Hayek's butt right now, and why are you frame by framing this? I'm like, listen, I'm writing.
This is my job. Our job's weird.
It is very weird. Wild Wild West was very easy to sin. There's just so much ridiculous in there. Jonathan, some thoughts from you?
I saw this in the theater. I didn't like it. I don't know that like I was... I'm kind of with Daniel. I mean, I think there were... It's weird, though, because like if you compare this... Because this was Barry Sonnenfeld, too, I think, right? So if you compare this movie to Men in Black, they're not like... They're going for the exact same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of similar things in there as far as like big movie, big summer movie, you know, comedy mm-hmm. and action right. and all that stuff. But for whatever reason, like Men in Black really works and Wild Wild West doesn't. And I don't know that I have a good answer for why that is, because they're very similar, not similar as plot goes, but just in as far as like the... who they're trying to attract as an audience and stuff like that. Like they're very similarly motivated films. But Men in Black is awesome. Like it's, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would agree that it's a classic at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And what Wild Wild West is just more people would just like to forget it. I will say the Kenneth Branagh performance though is, I hate that it's in this movie because
it's so strange.
Like, can we put Kenneth Branagh in Men in Black? Like that would make that even more epic.
It really is kind of Austin Powers-ish. Like, it's really, like, almost over-the-top parody what's going on with him.
And he just goes for it. Like, mm-hmm. and I can't think off the top of my head him doing that in anything else. Like,
I mean, he gets close in Tenet, man. Tenet is pretty over-the-top. But...
It is, but that's a much different environment. Yeah. Like, that's a much different aesthetic. But, you know, you're right. I think there probably is some of his...
That outtake
Wild
of
Wild
his
West.
Of his Tenet speech fits so perfectly.
Yeah. That's true. I will say real quick though, Robert Conrad was in the TV show Wild Wild West. Robert Conrad played the character that Will Smith played. Steve McQueen was in Wanted Dead or Alive. So I just got my I got my Western shows that I've never seen an episode of. Very confused. The other thing about this movie that I love is like hearing that Kevin Smith story, like, you know, 10 years later, where when Kevin Smith was writing the Superman script, mm-hmm. one thing that John Peter said to him was that he wanted Superman to fight a spider. He wanted Superman to fight a big spider, like at the Fortress of Solitude. And Kevin Smith was like, I'm not doing that because it's the Fortress of Solitude. Like, you know, no one's there.
It's not the Fortress of Spider-Tude.
Yeah. And that's just dumb. And then he goes and watches Wild Wild West like a couple years later. And then it gets to that scene with the big spider. And Kevin Smith's like, holy shit, John Peter's got his giant spider in a movie because yep. John Peter's produced this too. So those are the two things I always think about is Kenneth Branagh and that freaking spider. But yeah, just didn't care anything for the movie itself. The Few Good Men scene, where you guys are naming the full names of the characters.
Oh, like, yeah.
Who wrote that?
That was me. Listen, that was a running gag. There were three or four of those sins throughout because this movie does that.
Yeah,
several times.
Like James West.
So then the second one was after the character says General Bloodbath McGrath, the sin is, does the same intro, hope this movie goes full name position and makes every character say the full name and title of every other character in every conversation. In fact, every movie should do this. Facebook co-founder Eduardo Luis Saverin, you're going to blame me because you were the business head of the company. You made a bad business deal with your own company. Facebook co-founder Mark Elliott Zuckerberg, this is going to be like I'm not a part of Facebook. Wow. It won't be like you're not a part of Facebook, Facebook co-founder Edward Luis Saverin. You're not a part of Facebook. My name's on the masthead, Napster co-founder and supreme dick Sean Parker. Facebook co-founder Edward Luis Saverin, you might want to check again.
Wow.
So yeah, I did that several times, and then the finisher on that one. I hope this movie goes full names position and makes every character say the full name and title on every other character in every conversation. In fact, every movie should do this. We're gonna need a bigger boat, Mr. Sharps and Teeth Johnsington III.
That's awesome.
Capper. Anyhow, yeah, but we thought that was a little much, so we just went with the one. But yeah,
like because those are so great, but like. In the longer video, I think the worry is just like we're just going to lose people before we get to the
right.
joke,
yeah,
or
right.
to like the payoff.
Yeah.
No, I think doing it
like,
once
if
was
they stay there wrong. For that long, it's so good.
Yeah, yeah.
But we say that, and then we release like a 30-minute Eternals video, and that's like one of the highest watched. You just never know. You just absolutely you never know. I mean, with the older movies, we do try to keep them a little shorter. Sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. I love that. He thinks they are gay. That's why we're supposed to laugh. The possibility of homosexuality. That's the whole joke. That obvious revelation is great. And I will read the lynching sin because we didn't say the whole thing. So just for people that are listening, maybe haven't seen the video. This was my favorite sin. It was, no one involved in the production of this movie took a moment to think that a black man doing crowd work at his lynching was a bad idea.
Yeah. Needed to be pointed out. Needed to be pointed out. Let us move on to the comment section.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently. By using more sustainable practices. By developing better technologies. We keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
I appreciate your honesty. You're a real straight shooter.
You are the ones who are the ball lickers.
We're each going to pick a comment from the last week's content from the various places you reach out, Discord, YouTube, Reddit, etc. Let's see. I'll kick this off. This came from the West Side Story video. In the comments says, somebody finally said it. You know how frustrating it is trying to learn Spanish through movies when you have auditory processing issues? If it's not on Netflix, you're basically effed for subtitles. And this is in reference to the sin talking about how Spielberg used the movie and didn't give subtitles for any of the Spanish, which I think is a fine decision because it makes it feel more natural and it doesn't, you know, there is kind of a dumbing down of some of that stuff. And I understand we want to know what they're saying, but then you can turn subtitles, you know, on or whatever the case. But the thing is, when you turn subtitles on this movie, instead of having it be the Spanish subtitles, it just says, you know, continue speaking in Spanish and that kind of thing. And I just thought, for somebody who's bilingual, let's say, and they're turning on, you know, subtitles to hear, you know, the different nuances in the words that they're saying in both languages, it seemed like a really inconsiderate, you know, thing to do. We did have a conversation, by the way, about whether or not these were the official subtitles that, you know, were chosen for the movie and, you know, where the subtitles come from. And those can be changed too. Like, so, you know, it may change down the road, but we thought it was interesting enough in our copy how the subtitles were like that on the Blu-ray that it was worth mentioning. So, yeah.
And that point, and like, I think that's a great point because of our discussion was that, like, I had watched it, before I went to Senate. So it was a different version, but there was definitely more Spanish subtitles in that version. So, like, it's like we just didn't want to be saying something that might be incorrect for the viewer's experience, but it's still I still wanted it in as well because it's still an important point. And sort of like, if we can, like, we go through all the trouble of like getting like sound and like voicing done and like uniform across, like, within the production of a movie so that the experience is pretty uniform no matter where you watch it. But sort of making that decision for the subtitles doesn't seem to happen. Like, it can be different depending on what platform you streamed it. If you saw it in a theater, if you bought the Blu-ray, like why is that different? Like, why is that experience allowed to be different when we put so much effort into getting like the sound and the score and the voicing to be is all like baked into the movie, right?
So yeah, I agree. What about you guys? Jonathan?
I just ended up using one because I've just am like, I guess impressed is the word. I think this person on YouTube, Molly, and I think, I don't know if it's in the first ever TV Sins video, but she has commented on just about every TV Sins video with, please do everything wrong with Alias, truth be told. I don't want the whole series. I just want the pilot. I swear to God, this has been, and I'm at the point now where I'm in admiration of the
persistence.
Oh my God. It's because yeah. There's every now and then we'll get one due like on a couple videos, but I'm almost positive this is on just about every TV Sins video. You, if you go down far enough, you'll find Molly. Ask it. And I'm a huge Alias fan, so I do love the idea, but I think you would be the only viewer. So
maybe when JJ decides to do an Alias movie.
Yeah, maybe when we have a tie.
Maybe then.
But I love it. I love it at this point. I look forward to reading that comment.
Yeah. Daniel, what about you?
Okay. Yeah, I just picked this one just because it was it just made me laugh. It was super, super funny. A Kyle Brown stated, he put, this is how I put lead in, I'm going to make quick work of the Jets. Sin, the AFC East. Me, a New York Jets fan, laughing because it's funny, crying because it's true.
Oh my God.
Amazing. Amazing.
That is, I feel very bad for that fan base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. As a Lions fan, I don't.
You all probably right, don't know.
Moving on to nitpicking the nitpickers of the nitpickers.
We wouldn't want to nitpick. Right, Danny?
Pick a little, talk a little, pick a little, talk a little, cheep, 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 talk a lot, pick a little more.
Actually...
Oops. What do you mean, oops?
Missed it by that much.
Am I just going to nitpick everyone until they leave me?
We're
going
to take a look at some actuallys from the comments and decide together if the commenter was green, yellow, or red. Ian, what are the actuallys for this? No, I'm just kidding. I do have a couple of these that
That'd
we can look at.
He just popped in.
He just popped
like, oh
up.
My God, you guys timed that.
He's been here the whole time. This one from Teen Dream says, as a kid, I loved watching old movies because the credits rolled in at the beginning and usually did so in a way to captivate the audience. I hate that they roll at the end of flicks now and people get just get up to leave. All those set designers, costumers, everyone deserves to be seen. This is in response to sending the Wild Wild West opening credits, kind of TV show style mm-hmm. credits, where it's like a, you know, designed in a different way. And, you know, the part of this that is obviously green is, yes, they did. They used to put all the credits up front. They used to do them in, you know, different kinds of fun ways. Mm-hmm. And then probably commercial reasons and correct reasons, in my opinion, they realized that that was impacting their ability to really get into the story quickly and to catch people's attention. So what are your guys' thoughts on this? Should, you know, should they do more credits at the beginning or should they do them all at the end? Or what are your thoughts?
As far as people not staying through the credits at the end, for most like former and current theater workers that I've ever talked to, like they would like you to just leave as soon as the credits start. So I guess, it depends on how you feel about, you know, making it easier on a employee's life. I don't mind. I don't care either way. Because there's even movies now that don't have the title up until after the movie's over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that even happens now. So I've kind of just gotten used to it. But you're right, man. It used to be like, because those, like, watching those old Star Trek movies, those are the ones where I really notice it. Because it'll just be 3 minutes of space mm-hmm. and names. For like mm-hmm. 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily miss that. I mean, I'm fine with the way they kind of shorten it now, in mm-hmm. my opinion.
Yeah, watching some of the old Hitchcock movies you know, even some of the old musicals I love. Even just like watching Singing in the Rain recently. I rewatched Singing in the Rain, which, by the way, Downton Abbey's new movie is basically Singing in the Abbey. It is literally the plot of Singing in the Rain, which is part of it, one of the main plots. Anyhow, that's neither here nor there. It's crazy how much of it is just, you know, them just names being there. And that's just how it used to be. And I think it's better this way. I like going to a movie and getting right to the story. You know, obviously, as from a Sin's purpose, we're always going to Sin stuff that's not the movie. Like, it's just always going to get Sinned. So that's the only reason I would say red. but there is something to be said for maybe being a little more creative with the end credits. I like it when movies do that, where they mm-hmm. emphasize. I love it when movies go through the cast and have parts of their performance like playing while they're naming them. It's one of my favorite things, and so very few movies do it
Or but a blooper for me, or something.
Yeah, or yes, or something like that. There, you could do things like even with some of the other credits, like when you get to like the you know, set design people or whatever, have their pictures pop up, or maybe, you know, them laughing together and saying something about, you know, I don't know. You could do things in the credits.
Eating a hot dog, whatever. Just
right. You can do things in the credits to emphasize the people rather than just scrolling through a bunch of names. But, you know, it's just, it's ROI, right? Like return on investment for them. Like, you know, at some point, there's so many people involved in making a movie now that it's like you can't really honor all 2,000 of those people in a meaningful way.
I will say real quick about end credits, though. I'm tired of stingers. I wish those would just go away. Because they don't really ever add anything, unless you do something like the Avengers with them eating shawarma, like something like that I can appreciate. But like just trying to set up something else or do something like the Batman where it's like a website or something pops up at the end. I didn't even stay for it because somebody told me not to. But I think that needs to go away. Like I don't know. I hate having to know whether or not I need to stay and watch something.
I don't really have a feeling either, like one way or the other on it. I was going to bring up the point of just like how many people are involved in making movies like that. And like, especially a lot of these very big budget movies you look at, there is like thousands of people or something. That would be funny, I think, if a movie put all those right at the beginning and made you sit through that entire thing. I think that I would probably take that over some of the advertisements and things. Because I mean, if you go see a movie now, it is like 20 minutes before the movie actually starts. And like that's almost not even including the trailers.
Yep. All right. Let's move into the next one. This one says you can actually break magnetism of soft magnets by simply hitting them. So assuming the neck collars are made with some kind of iron-based magnet, yes, running into a wall really hard could save their lives. Conversely, hitting a rare earth magnet will not break its magnetism, but as they are very fragile, it could just break them. So running into a wall very hard will help again. So thoughts on
this? Green. I mean, I don't know. So sure. Daniel, you're the professor. Let us know what
tell us the answer.
Aaron wrote this one. So like, I have no idea.
I'm staying out of it.
That sounds like that person knows what they're talking about. So I guess I'll go green with that. As well.
So this is a clear red, and here's why. No, I'm just kidding. No, what they say is true, but it actually doesn't break our sin. Our sin is literally about how, if that's the case, that is the sin. If they literally can run into a wall and stop those things from chasing them, that is the sin. It should not be that easy to dismantle those things. Also, like a soft magnet isn't going to have the pull to pull a buzzsaw blade after them, I wouldn't think, but that's kind of a different topic. But yes, if just a little bit of, you know, percussive maintenance could have stopped those from working, that's actually the sin itself. But I do appreciate the education. Yeah.
Real quick, speaking of maggots, I randomly had to spend like 30 minutes researching whether or not maggots could survive underwater. That was fun.
Nice.
Some can, just so you know.
Okay, fair enough. Very good to know. That'll come in very handy in my life. And then finally, just so you know, this is from West Side Story. Just so you know, I Feel Pretty actually does take place after the Rumble in the original play. It opens Act 2. The first movie is the one that moved it. But yes, that version does seem better for sure. Thoughts on this one? Because we send the fact that the story goes into the I Feel Pretty after all like the murders have happened and all the death.
Oh, and then they're saying that in the original it does come sooner than that, or the...
No, in the original that's how it takes place. Pretty does come after
the
Rumble.
It comes sooner.
In the 60s version it takes place in a different order that makes more sense to me. Then in the modern version, the 2021 version, actually moves it back to after the Rumble.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I prefer it the way you just said. In the original version, that makes more sense. It's kind of, that does take away some of that, the cuteness of the song. I don't know, just the fun of the song, because then you're having to think about murders and...
Yeah.
A lot of people doing really inappropriate stuff after murders happened in this movie. Did not realize that till you guys send it.
What I don't have it up. What was the wording on the original Sin? Do you happen to have that?
I can pull that up. So the wording on the original Sin. Oh, we now take you directly from a knife fight where two major characters were stabbed to death into this fun little ditty about feeling pretty, witty, and bright, which is more than can be said about whoever's idea it was to move this song here. I mean, I might give them pretty, but witty and bright seem to be firmly out of reach. So that is how. So the whoever's idea it was actually the original writer's idea, the stage play writer's. So
I think we're allowed to send that, right?
Yeah, we can send that. Yeah, I think that works.
Just because it was their idea doesn't mean it was a good idea.
I think that. Yeah. I think that it should have been two sins then, because we should send two different people.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we should be adding a sin for sure. Yeah. There you go. All right. Let's move into the Sinpository.
History became legend.
The past is past.
Let's look at some statistics.
To the library.
Careful, Chief. You dig up the past, all you get is dirty.
We insert ourselves into the Sins repository, or Sins Sinpository, if you will, as Jonathan probes the annals of Sin history for a video we can reassess in both individual parts and the whole. Jonathan. What is our video today?
No, I'm kidding. We're doing X-Men Origins Wolverine, the classic cinema. But no, this was, for those who don't remember, this came out in 2009. This was the fourth X-Men movie. This was the one that followed Brett Ratner's magnum opus, X-Men The Last Stand, where the only thing I remember is that Kelsey Grammer played Beast, and it was actually not bad. Even though it was weird seeing him like in a suit with Kelsey Grammer's voice coming out of it. I will say X-Men Origins Wolverine, as far as my memory of it, I think I've seen it a couple times. I saw it in the theater, and then I think I watched it once since randomly, but I don't really like it, but I also don't necessarily hate it, I think, as much as most people. I just don't get it. Like, talk about it, this movie exists. I don't know what they're going for with this movie. I don't know who they're trying to, what audience they're aiming at. Like, a lot of it just doesn't make sense, because there's no stakes, really, because we know all these people, a lot of these people survive, obviously, which all prequels have that problem. But then if you're going to do that, that's fine. But then have like interesting action scenes, or have an interesting like plot or villain or something. And this movie really has none of that. So, I think the best thing about it is you get Ryan Reynolds before they turn him into like a muted Deadpool. He's Ryan Reynolds, so he's fun. And I guess, you know, if we don't have this movie although it didn't do as well as I thought it did, but make at least be a somewhat of a hit, we probably don't get the other two Wolverine movies, which are good. I would argue Logan might be the best superhero movie of all time. I would argue that. I don't know if there's a couple more I would put in that, but I love Logan. Although you could also argue Logan's not a superhero movie, too. I mean, so...
That would be weird to argue, though.
I'm just saying, I wouldn't be shocked if people say... Like, it's hard to compare Logan, though, to, like, Doctor Strange. Like, that's a hard, you know, that's a hard comparison to make. No, I think Logan at 100% is a superhero movie. I could just see people making that argument. Because it's basically a Western with X-Men. So, there you go. But... And we also, maybe we don't get the Deadpool movies if this doesn't happen. I found it interesting, too, when I was doing research on this. They had already started talking about a Deadpool movie with Ryan Reynolds in 2003.
Yeah.
And this was, you know, I had no idea.
It was meant to be.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like 14 years, I think, right? I think it's 2017, I think, was the first one. 2016, something like that. But anyways, this was released May 1st, 2009. It made $85 million opening weekend, which at 2009, that was definitely not bad.
That's not bad at all.
It didn't really, the only thing I could find, it was for movies that were released the first weekend in May, it was like the fourth or fifth highest grossing opening weekend. Spider-Man beat it, an X2 beat it, there was a couple others. It finished 13th at the box office. It ended up making $179 million domestic. I thought it did a little more than that, but that's where it was at. It made a little less than Ice Age 3 of all freaking movies. And it made a little more than Night at the Museum, Battle of the Smithsonian. It made like 2 million more than that. I also forgot, I was looking at the top 10. And of course, this is the year of Avatar, which became the highest grossing movie of all time. even though nobody has seen it, according to most people. And then you had a Harry Potter movie. You had the second Transformers movie, the second Twilight movie, Up. Those were kind of your top 10. Sherlock Holmes, Star Trek 2009, the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie. And then The Blind Side, which I did not remember. Yeah. It made that much money. I knew it was a hit, but I just assumed it was like $107 million or something, you know.
Yeah.
But no, it made over $200 million. So this was the fourth X-Men movie. There are now 13 X-Men movies if you include the first two Deadpools and all three of the Wolverines, which I think you should.
Is that including spoilers? Never mind. Continue.
I have them ranked by box office if you guys want to play around. I will say this. The first two are extremely obvious, and they outgrossed everything else by quite a bit. But
the first two, what?
If you were to go through the 13 X-Men films, the first X-Men through New Mutant.
Okay,
you have 13 X-Men films, including both Deadpool movies and all three Wolverine movies.
Uh huh.
So if you rank them by box office, the first two are pretty obvious because they made a lot more money than the other ones.
Are they the Deadpool movies? Yes. Or the first two? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Deadpool is one. Deadpool two is two. Yeah. New Mutants is pretty easy to guess too. It's last, but that was like one of the first movies released. I think it was the one that came out after Tenet during the pandemic.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah,
it only made $23 million.
That's a pandemic movie.
But the highest grossing one with X-Men in the title was shocking.
Is it X3?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the last stand.
It only made $1 million more than Days of Future Past. So
I wondered about Days of Future Past, yeah.
Yeah, Days of Future Past was the highest grossing of the later ones.
Days of Future Past was really kind of like Spider-Man No Way Home of its time, right? Like, it was like, there's this interesting thing that the X-Men movies did this kind of before Marvel did, where it's like, you know, we're bringing the whole band together, you know, kind of thing.
I would argue better. Marvel did. No, I like Days of Future Past a lot. I actually think I like it better than First Class now, because First Class was kind of always my favorite, but I think I like Days of Future Past a little better now that I've rewatched it a couple times. So X-Men Origins Wolverine, it's right in the middle. It's 7th out of 13. And then Logan is the only Wolverine film that grossed more than it. The Wolverine was only grossed $132 million. But so they're all just kind of in there. I was surprised at X-Men First Class is 10th. I thought it made more domestically than it did, but it actually didn't make as much as Apocalypse, which is, talk about like the Wild Wild West of X-Men movies. Man, X-Men Apocalypse, it's not good, but goddamn, it's entertaining. It's so entertaining because it's just so like, it's so batshit insane. Like oh my God, what a weird movie. Anyways, we'll get back to this. Just a little more trivia. Gavin Hood ended up being the director. There were quite a few directors that were considered, including Bryan Singer and Brett Ratner, who both were kind of interested in returning but didn't. Alexandra Aja, who most people know from like maybe Piranha 3D, Hot Tension was another, you know, and Mirrors. And so he's a horror director mostly. He was considered. And Len Wiseman, who did like the Underworld movies, or did a couple of them, I think, in Die Hard with a Vengeance. They were both also considered. This was also supposed to be the first Origins movie. There were supposed to be more, and they had already started working on a Magneto movie. But when this, I guess, didn't make as much money as they thought it would, they decided to reboot everything, and that's how First Class happened, which is probably better. A rough print of the film was leaked online a month before the release, which I kind of forgot about this. That started, like, I think I remember hearing about that. Fox estimates 15 million people downloaded it. So that probably factored into the box office as well. And fuck you for pirating a movie like that. Whoever did that.
Every last one of you.
Yes, every last one of you. Reviews for the film weren't great, but weren't as bad as I remembered. It's got a 38% on Rotten Tomatoes. Average is 5.1 out of 10. That seems fair. Cinema score is a B+. And then as far as like the casting, there were a few. Did you guys remember Will.i.am was in this movie?
No.
I didn't either. And he wasn't the first person. Quentin Jackson from the A-Team movie was the first person that got offered the role. He turned it down. Liev Schreiber replaced Tyler Mane as Sabretooth, although Tyler Mane wanted to do it. I don't know why they went with Liev other than Hugh Jackman just said he wanted to work with him. David Harbour was turned down for the role of Fred Dukes, which is the role that Kevin Durant ended up playing. But the reason David Harbour was turned down was because he was too fat at the time, which is interesting because that character becomes the Blob. Mm-hmm. But I guess when he wasn't in the Blob prosthetics, they said he was too fat, which that's unbelievably shitty. Like, they couldn't get him in shape. I don't know. Right. Maybe it was different back then. Scott Adkins did a lot of the stunt work for Ryan Reynolds once he became Weapon XI. I did not know that. Weapon 12, whatever. Weapon 11, I guess. And then I also I didn't realize Daniel Negreanu had a cameo in this movie.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. And Phil Hellmuth was supposed to be in that scene as well, but he had already committed to a Toronto. I assume it was a poker event in Toronto. Yeah. The CinemaSins video was released on May 14th, 2014. It was about a week before Days of Future Past came out, so I'm assuming that's why it was it was done. Videos were still kind of on the shorter end at that point. There was a 14 minute or less, which we occasionally have those, but it's a lot more rare these days. And this was the 106th CinemaSins video release, from what I could tell, and it currently has around 9.5 million views.
Ooh, about to hit that 10 million mark.
Yeah, it's getting
after
there.
This episode goes live, it's just gonna rock it right up to that 10 million mark.
All the 500,000 people that listen to this show. We just need each one of you to watch the video. That's all
just
we need.
Once. Just go watch it once. And while you're out there, go ahead and subscribe to TV Sins.
I thought about rewatching this, but I just didn't have time. And this is just not a movie. Like, it's just kind of blah. So I couldn't get any interest up for watching it.
I agree. I do remember when this movie came out that I thought it was entertaining enough, but it was just like, I don't know. It seemed strange to me. I love the Negreanu, cameo, just because I'm a big poker nerd.
Mm-hmm.
Watching this video was interesting. There were a couple things that I noticed. One, the sin about like feeling bad for Ryan Reynolds because he's cast as Van Wilder in every movie has aged so well, because it's so true. It continues to be true. And at the same time, I'm glad. That's what makes Ryan Reynolds so amazing and so fun, is because he's Van Wilder.
I guess so. You're just like, if Van Wilder became an FBI agent, or if Van Wilder became a superhero. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. So that one's aged really well. One that I didn't think has aged all that well is the lap dance sin, which was interesting. Like, it was interesting because, it was about Wolverine, coming out of the pool or whatever. And then it's tagged with, for the ladies or whatever. And it's funny enough, but there's part of me is like, I don't think we'd say that now. Like, I don't think we'd take like that angle on it, because now the narrators are much more bisexual, like much more pansexual. Like, they're attracted to both the men and the women. And like, it's kind of,
it's interesting. In some ways, I would say the narrators are thirstier. But we still wouldn't probably do. Yeah,
but
you're right.
Everybody.
The sins
have changed. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So the Deadpool stuff was interesting, because the video talks about the Deadpool fans not liking this version of Deadpool, not knowing at this point that we're going to get an actual Deadpool version of Deadpool, was interesting. And then I just loved the phrase "funhouse face Patrick Stewart," like that old style de-aging where it looks so bad. All that was really interesting to me. Daniel, what were some of your thoughts?
It was interesting to see, just because I haven't really had a chance to like watch a whole lot of the videos from before I started, because it's just like in the writing process all the time and like reviewing the newer ones. So it was going back in time a bit. It was interesting and kind of wondering whose mind that came out of. It's like, once you see like how the sausage is made, it changes your perspective a little bit on the videos.
It is interesting to me while watching this how much it really feels like a 2022 CinemaSins video. Like, we could release this video right now and it would feel really similar. Like, I was thinking, because that's only 2 years after the channel started, right? 2014. So the channel found its groove really fast in what it was going to be. I found that interesting. I was watching it going, this is 2014. This really feels like, one of our normal modern videos.
Just, it was just, like I said, 106 from what I could tell. And I mean, there's over 1,000 now, right? Of just CinemaSins.
Yeah.
There was another sin that like was playing off like just like the really bad CGI. And just like, I can't quite put my finger on what's wrong with the scene of the mutants running towards Xavier in his helicopter, but it might be that everything looks fake as shit.
Yeah, no, I like that one a lot.
Yeah, no, it's fun stuff. Yeah, it is interesting going back and watching these and just kind of getting a feel for, you know, what CinemaSins, how it's been through. You know, we're celebrating our 10th anniversary this year. In December will be our 10th anniversary as a wow. YouTube channel. And we'll probably talk more about that here on the show in some different ways. But it's just like to think of where YouTube was in 2012 and how yeah. many of, you know, how many YouTube channels that were popular in 2012 have stayed popular for 10 years. And guys, I think that list is pretty short, and I'm pretty proud to be a part of a yeah. channel that's figured out how to make it work over the last decade and just stuck with it and just been consistent in pumping out content. So, so yeah, it's a lot of fun to kind of go back and look at these things. That's going to wrap it up for Behind the Scenes this week. Don't forget to make sure you're subscribed and go ahead and leave a comment or rating as well. If you've got anything you want to send us, you can mail it to P.O. Box 881, Republic, Missouri 65738. You can hang out with us on Twitter. I'm at Aaron Dicer. He is at Sam Loomis 13, and Daniel is way too smart to be on Twitter. Yeah, for sure. So for Daniel Cardoso, Jonathan Watkins, a box of pet milk, and myself, we will see you next week.
Happy Aaron, Ian, and my birthday.
Happy birthday to us!
Yay!
Thanks for listening. Send any feedback to bts@cinemasins.com, and be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment. Find more ways to connect by visiting cinemasins.com/BTS.
Daniel, Jonathan hanging out. How are you guys?
Good.
Yeah.
Can't complain.
Well,
I could complain.
Yeah, go for it. Complain a little bit. Just a little bit.
I find Ronnie Yu's American films interesting because I don't think he has any clue like what America is. So I love his perspective because like Freddy versus Jason, and he did Bride of Chucky. And Formula 51, which is also called like the United States of something. I can't remember. Or the 51st state or something like that.
Really?
I think that was like one of the titles for it.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know anything that you guys are talking about.
And I'm pretty sure like Samuel Jackson wears a kilt in that movie.
Yeah, I remember
that.
I'm
pretty sure that he just chose to do that. Like, I don't think that anyone on the production team like made that choice. I think it might have just been him. But I mean... I probably shouldn't be quoted on that. I probably should research it, but that's the story that I vaguely remember from like years ago.
Well, this would have been 2001, so you might not have been watching everything yet.
Who's this person?
Samuel Jackson. Oh, the director is Ronnie Yu.
I have heard of Sam Jackson.
It's a movie called Formula 51 with Samuel Jackson and the Full Monty guy, whatever his name is.
Robert Carlyle?
Robert Carlyle.
Hmm.
It's an action comedy? Right.
It also has Emily Mortimer.
Is it an action? Yeah. Is it a comedy or is it like a thriller?
I consider it a comedy.
Yeah, I would think it would have to with those two in it. Although Carlyle's played some. I mean, he played a pretty interesting villain in that the Bond movie he was in.
Oh yeah, it was like Tomorrow Never
World
Dies.
Is Not Enough.
Yeah.
He has like a scar and he's bald because he's a Bond villain. Not maybe he's not bald, but he does have a scar, and I think his eyes messed up.
Yes, he doesn't like feel any pain or something like that.
That's it. Yes, he doesn't.
I'd much rather be talking about the new Downton Abbey movie personally, but you know. Who knows why we like what we like, but Downton Abbey A New Era is basically my Avengers Endgame.
If I ever watched that show, I'm sure I would love it.
I was just thinking like they're panning, they do this thing at both the beginning and the end of this movie where they have events where like all these characters, you know, from the TV show, you know, are together. And there's like at this point, like 40 characters to keep up with. And I'm just like, this is a pretty interesting juggling act they're doing, making a movie with this many characters trying to keep their, you know, plot points and interesting things relevant and keep the soap opera aspect kind of going. And it's wild.
Yeah, that's exciting. So anyways, Formula 51. No, I'm kidding.
It's also one of those things my wife and I love together. So, you know, it's fun.
We watch a lot of true crime together. That's kind of what my wife.
Hey, honey, want to watch some murders?
Well, it's really, she got me into it. Like, I did not watch true crime for the longest time because it freaks me out too much. I mean, like, which is weird, I know. But, like, horror movies are fake. So like that's a
no, totally. Jen is the same way. We watched CSI together for a while, and then at some point she was just like, "This is changing the way I view the world. Like this is like I will be on the treadmill going like I'm gonna get kidnapped. I'm going to get killed. Like it's just
oh, you should have a daughter." and then
right?
And then go watch like 20 episodes of Criminal Minds and realize like 99% of that is kidnapping women.
Yeah.
I feel like dads get ridiculed for this. Like we never understood something until we had a daughter. And that's not true. We did, but we never had that connection to a individual.
Stop getting annoyed when people have revelations. This is what I've decided. Like if somebody has a revelation because they suddenly have someone in their life that it makes sense to them, or like we tend to do this thing where we're like, yeah, but you should have known that ahead of time. You should have known that before. It's like, okay, yeah, maybe true. But like, let's let people learn, let people grow, let people figure out, oh, when I have a kid, it now is something more intense for me. That's okay. Like that makes sense.
Yeah. There's that great Ryan Reynolds. And maybe it's not even you're having a revelation, but it's just, you have a relationship in your life you didn't have before. Right. So it means something different. Ryan Reynolds was on like Letterman or something. And it was right after they had their first child. And he was talking about how up until they had that kid, how much he loved his wife. And he would, have you seen this? And he's like, I love Blake. And, you know, I would do anything for her. I would give my life for her. He's like, but once I saw that baby's eyes open, I knew I would put Blake in front of us as a shield.
I think the reason people kind of push against it is like that means, you know, that when you're not complete until you have a kid, like you don't have a complete understanding of emotions in the universe. I don't think that's what people are saying. I think there's just different experiences create different emotions,
because you wouldn't know any different. Like if you never have a kid, you don't even know what that is. So it doesn't matter. Like that's what I think. So no, I definitely would never say that, but
yeah.
Said you don't know what a kid is.
I just see Jonathan in the delivery room. Oh, that's what a baby is. I've been trying to figure this out for so long.
Was I asked the nurses if I could touch her, and they were like, yeah, it's your kid. I was like, but I didn't know if they had to like do something, like, you know, bathe her. I had no idea. Like, you know, it wasn't like I'm not an idiot, but it was just funny. Because that I will never forget that, because she was just looked at me like I was an idiot. She's like, yeah, it's your child. Yeah, do whatever you want.
Go ahead, man.
There's this comedian, Johnny Jonagan, I think that's his name. And he has a great joke. It's about kids. It's not about his kid, but he was just talking about his like sister had like a baby. And like they were the first thing they were like, is like, and you can babysit. And his joke is just like, what about you having a kid makes me qualified to watch one?
I mean, I didn't think I was going to be like tackled if I like went for her, but I was still just like, I didn't want to give her a disease or something. But then again, like I wouldn't be in that room if they were concerned about that. So, because it's not like, I don't think I had to wear a mask. I just had the hat, like the shower cap thing. And,
Interesting. I didn't even have to wear any of that stuff. That's interesting.
I think I didn't have the shower cap thing. I did have like I had a gown on or whatever. They put something over me. They brought something out to me to put on. It was just like one of those hospital gowns or
maybe
whatever,
that was just because they looked at you and they were like, oh, that guy needs a gown. That guy, we don't want that guy's clothes near that baby. JCD says, I'm calling it now that Daniel wrote on Wild Wild West because there's one sin that required me to Google something. That seems to be his MO. Nice. Very nice.
Yep. Now you know what it's like to review a Daniel script.
Yeah.
You are not as smart as Daniel.
Okay, so I have had like the craziest computer week, and I had one machine go down, and then the machine I replaced, the machine that went down, like down, like wouldn't even turn on. The machine I replaced that with had like booting issues because of some sort of security patch. So I had to like call my computer guy and get it all figured out. And now my internet every once in a while is just like dropping for 5 seconds, which I don't understand.
That stinks.
So if I go away for 5 seconds, just know I will probably be back in about 5 seconds.
All right. But so if we count to five and you're not back, back, do we call the authorities?
Yes. Yes. Please call someone. Yeah. I've probably been eaten by a dog, I would guess.
Do we have a first officer? Like who would be?
I'll let that be you, Daniel.
I was hoping it would be you. I wanted to be more of like a science officer.
We don't really have. I mean, I guess if anybody, it's probably Ian, because he's like the other host occasionally, but he's not here. So we'll probably just like chat it up a little bit and, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yep.
I always like those episodes where, who's it like Data is in like command of the Enterprise randomly. This is becoming Star Trek again.
That's all right. I know Star Trek. I'm on the Star Trek podcast right now. So like, you know, I know
that
Trek.
That doesn't upset me and Daniel at all, who are actual fans. Although, to be fair, the point of that podcast, right, is Ian is the expert and then everybody else is a newbie. So.
Right. Correct.
But I have heard rumblings that other things might happen.
So. I think everybody will be on Captain Spot. It's crazy how many like huge Star Trek fans we have on the staff. Like all eight of us. Ian has messed with my text intro after I gave him access to the account. So he has welcome to Behind the Bins that he has changed it to.
He said he was going to do something. I thought he was joking. So
he was not joking. I did hear him say that too, because he had such trouble like with one of the intros. I'm like, Ian, you don't have. It's not a teleprompter. Just like say what you want to say to get into the segment.
Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to Ian. And I guess Aaron and Jonathan too.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.